Well, welcome to the second week of this series that we're calling Mind the Gap. Mind the Gap is a famous slogan that warns travelers on the London Underground about that dangerous open space, you know, between the edge of the platform and the oncoming train. And we think that that's just a great analogy, Mind the Gap. It's a great analogy to the dangerous gaps that can happen in human relationships. Gaps that result in disagreement and conflict and sometimes even violence. And to avoid these outcomes, we all need to mind the gap and try to manage conflicts in a healthy and loving way. Fortunately, the Bible has a lot of advice about how to do that. And so we started last week in the first episode of the series. We looked at the source of all conflict, and we said that the source of all conflict is our own false belief that we know the truth and the other person we disagree with does not. Now, truth can unify people, of course, but the problem arises when we think we have a monopoly on the truth. You know, the prideful need to be right. It just hurts other people. Love, in the midst of conflict, starts by acknowledging that each of us really only has a partial understanding of the truth, and that we need to be curious about how the other person is experiencing the situation and listen with empathy to his or her understanding of the truth. Now, in today's episode, we're going to explore a few traps that people easily fall into when trying to navigate conflict. And the funny thing is that all of these traps are in the gospel story this week. It's actually a model of how not to handle conflict. So let's take a look. This week's gospel passage actually begins, it's a continuation from last week. And so what happened last week was that Jesus went into the local synagogue, right, in his hometown where he had grown up. He was just beginning his public ministry, and he went there to his synagogue. And you know, it was a basic church service like what we do here on Sundays. People gathered to pray and to listen to the readings from the Bible. And when rabbis like Jesus were passing through town, you know, the guest rabbis, they were usually invited to preach. And so Jesus came into the synagogue. He was invited to preach. He opened the scroll and he read from a section of the prophet Isaiah that predicted the coming of the Messiah. But then, instead of a typical sermon, Jesus made a bombshell announcement. He said to them, "Today, this scripture passage is fulfilled in your hearing." Which means, hey guys, I'm the Messiah. I'm the one you've been waiting for hundreds of years. And that's when things got ugly. Unlike in the movies, you know, when the hero comes home from the big city, when Jesus comes home, he gets nothing but grief. And after he had finished speaking, they did speak highly of him for a while. They were amazed at the gracious words that came from his mouth. But then they started thinking about it and they started talking amongst themselves. They said, "Wait a minute. Isn't this the son of Joseph? We know this guy. He grew up here. I remember him when he was just this tall, a little bitty boy. Who does he think he is?" Other versions of the story say they took offense at him. But notice what happens, that none of the people approach Jesus directly. They don't say, "Hey, Jesus, you know, I knew you growing up. What you're saying makes me feel uncomfortable. Can we talk about it?" No, they didn't do that. No, what they did is they talked among themselves. They never approached Jesus directly. Instead, they just gossiped and complained to each other. And that's the first common mistake. That's the first trap that many of us fall into when we're dealing with conflict. It's called triangulation. And it's not good. You see, here's how it works. Most people hate conflict, right? I hate conflict. Probably most, if not all of you, hate conflict. Given the choice, most of us would rather have a root canal than speak directly and honestly to someone with whom we're upset. And so we convince ourselves, oh, it wouldn't do any good to talk to them. Or it would just make things worse. And so instead of confronting the person who hurt us, we start telling the story to other people to gain their sympathy and to tell us that we're right, after all, right? We tell the story from our point of view, leaving out all the messy details about the mistakes we made in the conflict. We want that third person to tell us, hey, you're not the problem. It's really that other person. But triangulation is not good because it doesn't give the other person the opportunity to explain. And it just tends to spread mistrust and create division among people who end up being forced to take sides, sometimes among friends and family members. Jesus himself once said that if someone hurts you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. He didn't say, go have a glass of wine with a friend and complain about it. Well, that's the first mistake is triangulation, talking about the conflict with someone else instead of the person you need to talk with. A second common mistake when it comes to conflict is what's called the misattribution of intention. Now, that's a mouthful, but it basically means just assuming bad motives by the person who has hurt you, right? And it's exactly what the villagers do to Jesus. See, Jesus was just simply trying to tell them that God had sent him into the world to love and forgive them, that he was the Messiah. This was good news, but the villagers saw it as an insult. What they heard was a local boy, too big for his britches, telling them that he was the important Messiah, and they were just small potatoes. And so they assumed the worst about Jesus. See, when we've been hurt by someone, we often assume that the other person meant to do it, that they meant to hurt us, right? Right. So when your spouse forgets to pick up the dry cleaning, it's because he's irresponsible and just doesn't care about what you need, right? Or when someone cuts you off in traffic, it's not because they're racing to get to the hospital to be with someone they love, it's because they're just a mean, selfish jerk endangering everyone else around them, right? Or when your supervisor at work asks you to redo some of the things you've done, it's not because you did shoddy work, it's because she's out to get you. Or when your teacher at school gives you, I know this never happens to you, Misha, but when your teacher at school gives you a low grade, right, you believe it's because he favors the other students. But what's interesting is that we don't assign bad motives to ourselves, right? When we do something wrong, it's different. We give ourselves an out. We don't attribute bad intentions to ourselves. Like when you forget to do something like, you know, I don't know, book the airline tickets for your family vacation, it's not because you're irresponsible and don't care. It's because you're overworked. And when you're cranky and snap at someone in your family, it's not because you're just a mean person. It's because you're just so stressed out. And why can't everybody just understand me? That's the second mistake, right? We assign bad motives to other people, but we excuse ourselves. Then comes the third mistake, and this one often is the core of most conflicts that we face. After Jesus realizes that the villagers are gossiping about him, he goes to them, right? He does the right thing. He doesn't triangulate. He goes to them. And he talks to them about it. He challenges them a little bit by telling them something they didn't want to hear. And sometimes we all have to do that, even in a conflict. We have to challenge people with something they don't want to hear, but we have to do it lovingly, of course. And in fact, that's what happened to most of the prophets, right, in the Bible, actually all of the prophets. That's what the first reading was about. God told Jeremiah, you're going to be my prophet, and guess what? They're not going to like what you have to say, and they're going to fight against you, but don't worry, I'll be with you. So it happened to Jesus too. So what exactly did he say that set them off? Well, he challenged them by referring to two examples in the Bible of when God treated non-Jewish people, seemed to treat non-Jewish people better than the Jewish people, once when there was a famine and once when there was leprosy. And that was the final straw. See, Jesus had challenged the villagers' belief that as Jewish people, they were the only ones acceptable to God. And this is where so much conflict in our lives erupts. When we say or do something that challenges someone else's belief system, and they don't react very well to it, or we don't react very well when someone challenges our belief systems. See, conflict isn't usually a disagreement about the facts. Oh, you know, we argue all the time about the facts, but really, we're arguing about the beliefs that each of us attaches to those facts. And the mistake we make in times of conflict is to argue about these beliefs that we have rather than being curious, like we said in the first week, about how the other person came to those conclusions, how that person came to believe that. And if we can understand that, figure out how they got there, maybe we can find some middle ground. But we don't do that. We just challenge each other's beliefs, and then we have a bad conflict. See, this is what happened right there in the gospel. The facts were not at issue. The Bible clearly stated that non-Jewish people, Gentiles, would be included in God's plan of salvation, that they were loved by God. And the villagers would have known this. They knew the scripture. But see, what happened is that after centuries of oppression by invading foreign nations filled with non-Jewish people, the Jewish people came to believe that the Gentiles were just evil, you know, and that God hated them. And so when Jesus rightfully challenged that belief, he tapped right into their emotional concerns, and it set them off. They didn't react well at all. When the people in the synagogue heard this, they were all filled with fury. They rose up and drove him out of the town and tried to kill him. So these three mistakes, triangulation, misattribution of intention, and then challenging someone's beliefs rather than listening to how they got there, these are all the same in handling conflict, and they're incredibly common mistakes. They were actually the cause of the first conflict in human history. You might know what the first conflict in human history was, because it happened almost immediately after we were created. In the story of creation in the book of Genesis, you know that allegory about creation, God created Adam and Eve. He put them in the garden, right? And he told them that they could eat all the fruit from any of the trees except from the one tree that they couldn't, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And everything was good and everything was fine for a few days. But then in came the serpent. The serpent came in and he tried to create a conflict between God and humanity. And those three mistakes, those three pitfalls are right there in the story of the temptation of Adam and Eve, right? So the serpent tells Eve that she should eat the forbidden fruit. It's okay, right? But nobody talks to God about it. Like, he doesn't say, Eve, I think it's okay if you eat the fruit. Maybe you should talk to God about it. No, no. The serpent just talked to Eve, and so God got left out of the conversation. That's triangulation. Then the serpent tried to convince Eve that God had bad intentions when he prohibited them from eating the fruit. The serpent, you remember what he says? He says, God just doesn't want you to be like him and know the difference between good and evil. In other words, God is being selfish, Eve. You should go ahead and eat the fruit. Second mistake, right? Assigning bad motives. Third, he challenges Eve's beliefs. She says, no, we're not allowed to eat that. But he says, no, you're fine. You're not going to die. Instead of trying to understand her beliefs, which the serpent obviously doesn't care about, he wants her to eat the apple, he just challenges her belief system, and she falls for it. And it creates a conflict from between God and humanity, the fall of humanity. And ever since that first conflict, God has been working with us to bring humanity back into harmony with him and with each other through love. St. Paul talks about that in the second reading, which is just one of the most beautiful passages in the Bible. Paul basically says this, look, you can be the most holy, self-righteous, a wonderful person in the world. You could do great things in the world, but if you don't have love, if you're not motivated by love, it's all for nothing. Here's what he says about love. Love is patient. It's kind. It's not jealous. It's not pompous. It's not inflated. It's not rude. It doesn't seek its own interests. It's not quick-tempered. It doesn't brood over injury. It doesn't rejoice over wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. It bears all things. It believes all things. It hopes all things and endures all things. Love never fails to bring people together. And to this list, we could also add that love does not triangulate conversations. It does not avoid difficult conversations. We could also say that love does not assume the worst in the other person. And love tolerates and tries to understand the beliefs of others. The only real way to manage conflict well is through love. Every day, you and I suffer little emotional injuries. Well, sometimes they're big ones. But a lot of times they're just small ones. You know, somebody looks at us the wrong way, or somebody just makes a slightly cutting remark or innuendo or something that just, or they cut you off in traffic, or there's just a little something, or they ignore you in a conversation. We get these all day, every day. I don't know if you know, a lot of times we just block it out in our conscious mind. But what I want you to do this week is be attentive to those things, to those emotional wounds when they come up. And when you feel hurt, when someone cuts you down or cuts you off, try not to assume the worst. Try to talk to them about it. Try to listen and understand their point of view. Or if it's a stranger that you can't talk to, one of the things I love to do is I write a story in my head about what happened to them that day that made them lash out at me. Like a charitable story, you know, where I can feel compassion for them. If you can do that, you'll feel better about the situation, and it's the loving thing to do. Love. It corrects every error, reverses every mistake, covers every misstep, and bridges every gap.